Welcome back to Beholder to No One, a TTRPG podcast. Today I'm here again with Daniel. Hello.
Hello, Nikki. It's great to be on.
Yeah. Today we're going to focus on you and crowdfunding in general instead of other people's stuff, because I think you have been in the background too long and you need to shine.
Thank you. I love that. Yeah, it's always fun hearing other people who I set up meetings for going on podcasts, but I've been enjoying going on podcasts recently. It's a really good time, so thanks for having me.
It's like, what is this new thing? I set it up for so long, but I have no idea what it was like.
Yeah, I'm used to like getting introductions set up for designers to go on shows, and it's cool to get to talk about crowdfunding. I love crowdfunding, so I'm like a big crowdfunding nerd, so it's always a joy to talk about for me.
Yes. For those that don't know or haven't listened to the last episode, which was the episode related to the
Heroes of Tara?
Yes, Heroes of Tara. That was ancient Ireland based, which was a very interesting concept and lots of lore, lots of stuff. But Daniel also was the first person to introduce me to Tanner from Magic School Mysteries, which was our very first one shot for Beholder to One Shots, which started that long line of games. So you can thank Daniel for that.
I'm glad you always work with me, Nikki. I think we have the longest standing relationship of any like relationship I have with any podcaster, and it's always nice. Yeah, it's nice that we kind of got our starts together like that. It makes me happy.
I win. You heard that's all now, podcasters. I win. Anyway, so tell us a little bit about yourself and like how long have you been playing TTRPGs and how long have you been doing crowdfunding in general?
Yeah, so in terms of TTRPGs, I started doing tabletop gaming when I was like 12 years old. Went to Adventurers League at a game store with my uncle, and then I played Dungeons & Dragons there, and then I went on this trip to India with my dad for like 3 months, and I was like reading all the different books, learning all of the Dungeons & Dragons stuff on that trip, and I loved it, and I've been doing that now for 14 years, and I've, you know, played 20 plus systems. I love trying new systems out. And then in terms of crowdfunding, I did it originally with the game Fuel Priest was the first game I helped fund. I started doing that with a bunch of friends. My friend went to college for game design and started it there. And then they graduated and we started working on getting it fully published. And I was going to school for marketing at that point. This is about 5 years ago. And that one funded. And then after that, I was kind of hooked. I just loved seeing a community be built around something and seeing somebody's dream get achieved. I find it very meaningful to do crowdfunding. And so then after that, I helped crowdfund Magic School Mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And then I helped crowdfund Heroes of Tara. So it's exciting. It's a really cool system that we have to allow creative people to have control of their product, but also have an audience for it. It's really nice.
Yes, and there's a lot in the background of crowdfunding that people don't realize. Like, you just see, oh, it's crowdfunded. Cool, awesome. What? I donate money, and that's all you do, and you never see it again. You don't see all the little things that go beyond that, the scheduling of interviews and the promotional contents and the tweets and the pictures and the okay, we hit our goal, now what type of stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot behind the scenes, and you know, it's just as important to get it funded as to make sure that you're making promises that you can fulfill on. And so yeah, I mean, that's really where I'm like specialized. I mostly do the community management and marketing management, but when you're working with small teams, you know, it's always a situation where everybody's wearing many hats. So I usually end up doing some budgeting and some play testing as well. Often some design. Yeah.
So you've only done the TTRPG Kickstarters?
Yeah, I've only done TTRPG Kickstarters, but I do feel like a lot of games and a lot of especially are similar to each other, and then I feel as though promotion for most products are very similar. There's this crowdfunding expert, his name's Salvador Rigman. I listened to his podcast and I like read his book and stuff, and he talks about this like Kickstarter launch formula.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of this system that you can follow to crowdfund most anything. And he mostly works with like tech products, but
mm-hmm.
it's always really useful to see what they're doing with tech products in order to learn new methods or like innovative methods to bring to TTRPGs.
It's actually funny because that's a method that they recommend on YouTube as well, is look at other people's stuff and then like find a way to make it related to your niche.
Mm-hmm.
So same concept, like he's explaining technology and you just need to make it fit for TTRPGs or board games or whatever. They suggested that a lot on YouTube. So like if you saw a spin the wheel makeup challenge, how do I make that related to books or whatever, if you talk about books.
Yeah, definitely. It's always useful to like bring something new. I feel like it's almost always like people who you're talking to and trying to like promote to, you know, if you keep saying the same things, it'll get boring to them. And like you want to like add value to their lives by them seeing your content to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always good to see how people are adding value to people's lives somewhere else, and then you can bring that to you, your own space. Yeah, it's always good to be looking for those patterns.
And then you have me, who just repeats the same stories 80,000 times because I forget who I said them to.
I think I do that too sometimes.
Yeah, I just started saying, like, you probably heard this before, but...
You know, I think you said something a little bit different with what you just said. But now my ADD brain's forgetting what you just said. I'm sorry.
You're fine.
Okay.
So when somebody comes to you with an idea, should they have it already like fleshed out? Should they have like the full concept done before they even start crowdfunding? Or should they just have like, could they possibly, again, this is purely related to tabletop stuff. Could they possibly just have, I have a concept and like, this is what I want it to do. And then they build it as it's being crowdfunded? Or should they like have built it or have started most of it and they're just finalizing it before they even think about crowdfunding?
Yeah, so there's kind of two questions, because like one is when you contact me as like a marketer, and one is when you contact or when you put up your crowdfunding campaign. So mm-hmm. for the crowdfunding campaigns, and that's the more interesting part, I would recommend that somebody has it about 80% done with whatever they're working on. And the reason for that is you want to have a good proof of concept that you can show to people. So you want, like, for TTRPGs, it's like a quick start guide that's pretty solid and has a decent amount of playtesting. It's always helpful to be able to say on your Kickstarter page, we have playtested this many hours of the game. And also, you want to have it that far along because you want to also have, like, good artwork to display on the Kickstarter page. The other thing is like when you can contact me is really like if there's like a marketer or like community manager that you are looking to bring onto your project, if you can show that you basically are somebody who can finish a project, that's the main thing. So if mm-hmm. you have past projects you can point to and say, yeah, I've completed these projects and, you know, I'm pretty serious, then you know, you can get somebody to come onto your team pretty easily. But if you just have the idea and you haven't developed it and it's your first idea, I'd probably wait till you have kind of like playtests going and invite a marketer to come see one of your playtests. Once you feel confident enough that it would be, you know, it doesn't have to be terribly impressive, but just something that has enough rules to be playtested.
That's fair.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely a good point. I know that a lot of people use Kickstarters to gain the money for pictures. So they'll have like most of it done, and they'll have like generic spots where they want pictures to be and they know what they want, but they haven't been able to purchase them yet because they don't have that funding. So they've designed everything except for the artwork and like the book cover, maybe. Though I think I would probably get the cover done before I kickstarted personally, just because that's what's going to draw a lot of people in, I think.
Yeah. I mean, what I recommend would be have your front page and then like 3 to 5 other pictures. So you don't have to fill out a whole book. And obviously, you know, no shade to people who need the money to fund it from the beginning. But I find often Kickstarter is a lot more about like engaging and taking people who are already interested in your product and making them into kind of like the inner circle or like a group that's like extra dedicated to your product.
Mm-hmm.
So it is usually worth having an audience first and having some solid promotional materials, like those like 6 images is usually what I would recommend.
That's fair.
Yeah. And I would say too, like one helpful thing is once you have like your images, you can always do some like low cost Facebook ads. You can spend like $30 and put them all up as ads, and you can see what people like the most based on what they're like clicking like on or clicking up your image to be taken to your Facebook or to your Kickstarter page, and you can see what you should put as your header image,
right,
based on that.
And I know that they don't judge a book by its cover, but honestly, like, you have to draw people in somehow.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm part of a lot of Facebook groups where there's people who are Kickstarter backers, and often there'll be somebody who comes there who's about to run a Kickstarter, and they'll ask, like, what do you guys look for most in a Kickstarter? And art is one of the top things I see people commenting on those Facebook posts. So I do think it's important.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I mean, the lore and the information inside is great, but perfect example is if you have a book. Okay, here's an example. I helped a friend with this, and I'm not bashing on their thing at all. This isn't nothing against anybody, but they gave a Word document, and I just read through it, and I was just supposed to like grammatically correct it and like fix any errors or typos or whatever, and offer some advice. So I did that, and then they're like, "Okay, cool, it's ready to go," and I'm like, "Go where?" They're like, "Oh, out for sales, to sell it." I'm like, "But this doesn't look like a tabletop game yet. This looks like a Word document still." Most people who are buying something don't want a Word document. They want a finished product if they're going to spend actual money on it. So even if it's as small as, if you don't have pictures even if it's as small as making the font fit the style of the game, or having different headers or changing the way it looks so it's laid out the same way, and small little details like that, I think helps a lot. Because if you look at games like Curse of Strahd, for example, there's so many people who say Curse of Strahd is confusing because it's so disorganized and it's not really in the proper way, to the point where people need to have a separate guide to help them with Curse of Strahd. Some people are fine with it because they can remember things or organize things on their own. But for me, like personally, I have a shitty memory. So it doesn't matter if I read ahead or anything. I'm not going to remember exactly where this person is and where I saw that information from if it's 20 pages apart.
Yeah. 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 And I mean, I think a lot of times people start off pretty shallow. There's kind of this like theory and marketing that's called like the sales funnel, where you start with just like different steps that people have to take to like your product, and you lose some people at each step, but you try to lose as few people as possible. So it starts with like the first step, you have a lot of people who will see your product, and then some of those will be like interested, and then some of those people who are interested will like come check you out on your website or you know, go look up a review of you. And then some of the people who see that will go to your Kickstarter page. And then some of the people who get to your Kickstarter page will back you. Right. Yeah. So you lose some people at each stage. And I think right when they get to like the Kickstarter page, or if they get to a step where they're like checking to see what you have so far, like your base document, and they see that it's like not laid out, it's like it might be really solid rules, but I don't think that they'll read through the rules. They'll just leave after seeing the cursory glance that it's not laid out in a way that they find appealing.
Yeah, I like the ones that offer like a preview if it's a longer book, because you can get a grasp of what they're going to provide. So like Satine Phoenix and Jameson Stone, when they released their recent book, The Bard Book, they had like a 16-page introduction that explained a little bit about the city and the city's history. And you got to see like all of the lore that you would get in this book and why it exists and how it works and blah, blah, blah. And that got you interested enough. Plus, there was beautiful artwork in it. So it wasn't just like, ooh, cool words. It was like beautiful artwork. But I know that I also personally, even if somebody didn't have an example, if they showed like glimpses of pictures, like this is what the page layout looks like, here's an example of the character sheet or something like that, that would get me more interested than just like nothing on there.
Yeah, I think you know, the more you can show, the better. I have worked fortunately with a lot of game designers who are very open about like what they're working on, very willing to like put it out there into the world. And I sometimes it takes a little bit of convincing, because sometimes game designers are a little worried, like, what if somebody steals my idea, or I put this document into the world somebody, you know, makes a very similar game, or says I'm like, or points out flaws. But it's like, if there's a flaw, then it's something you'd want to fix, right? And I've found that sharing as much as you can of what you're working on is almost always a benefit. For example, with Heroes of Tara, the most recent Kickstarter campaign we did was one where we put out a 240-page demo document. Looking back at it, I would probably do something shorter just to like keep it concise for people, just so that, you know, it's not overwhelming. But we put that out in the middle of the campaign, and I was watching the data on the back end of Kickstarter that was saying, like, is anybody going to stop backing us because they already have so much of the product? Are they going to say, you know, I'll just play with this and not back us because of that? And I watched it, and we actually did not see that. We didn't see anybody. We saw no more people dropping than we saw dropping before we posted that. So,
yeah.
People were more engaged by having that, and a lot of people were coming up to us saying that they appreciated us posting that. And we got some helpful feedback on it that helped improve the game, you know? So it's all a win to post as much as you can of what you're working on.
Yeah, I think another thing that I've seen that I really like that TTRPGs specifically do is you can just get the PDF, but you can also buy the hardcover book or the paper-bound book or whatever. And then when you get the physical copy, you also get a free TTRPG or PDF, which means you get the product sooner and can play it and enjoy it, but then also you eventually will get the paperback version or the physical version that you purchased originally. It just is going to take a little bit longer. And I like that because I really enjoy having both. I like having it with D&Ds, for example. Between my friend and I, we own most of the D&D 5e books. And then between my husband and I, we own all of the Starfinder books. I will still prefer sometimes to look up PDFs because I can just control F and look for something really quick. It's just easier instead of like, okay, let me go find where that book is on my shelf. It's somewhere over here.
That too is like for the people making the games, like if somebody listening is like thinking about doing their Kickstarter, you know, giving away a PDF costs you nothing. You just send an email and you give somebody a PDF. So I mean, if anybody's getting anything else that's bigger than a PDF, why not give them a PDF, right? So So
yeah, exactly.
And just make their life easier, like you said, with the Control F ability. Why not?
Now, I will say I did see something recently that I really didn't like. And so I won't name names and I won't name the product. I believe you'll know, though, which person it is. They're the person that you mentioned me to. And I just messaged you. I was like, hey, did you mention me to this person? Like, they just messaged me out of the blue.
Oh, yeah.
And again, I'm not upset about you mentioning me. I'm perfectly fine with it. I did not like their method of connections, though, because first off, they tag you publicly. Because I don't have my messages open. And so I messaged them and I'm like, hey, what's up? What's going on? And it felt like a sales call, basically a sales pitch. And I'm like, okay, well, you're not even gonna say hello. Great. Awesome. So first off, I didn't really like the item to begin with.
Yeah.
I expressed what my concerns were with the item. And I said, I don't like that you can do this because this could happen. And I don't like that you could do this because this could happen. And here's my concerns and why I don't feel like it will work. And then they're like, I'm like, also, like, I don't have an hour and a half of content. There's no way this will fill an hour of content even. Like, I don't think that's going to be worth it to even have a conversation for a podcast. I might be able to talk about it for 10 minutes and that's like, about it. That what are you gonna do, repeat yourself? Like, that's
sure
what you could do.
Yeah.
I mean, the concept in theory was cool, but in practice I don't think it would work. So then I thought that would be the end of it when I said what I said, and then they messaged me again. It's like, oh, well, here's the final product and what it looks like, and they sent a picture. If you had to price it, what would you price it as? And I'm like, I don't fucking know. Like, I'm not a person that prices things. I'm a podcaster that doesn't even want to pay for it. Like,
yeah.
And then, like, I noticed that they posted on people's posts too, like wherever. And I think they were doing this to multiple people that had any sort of following, because I've seen other people complain about them.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I hear you. Yeah, I think that influencers are like a thing a lot of people don't think about early enough. I think, like, because, like, when I want to work with somebody, I want to have like a long lasting relationship with them. And it's really harsh to start off with like a sales thing. I like to try to think about when I'm interacting with everybody, that's audience, my clients, influencers, how am I like helping make their lives better at the same time as helping me? I want to make like win-win scenarios happen. So I like to, when I'm trying to find influencers, reach out to them or start talking to them in a way like 3 months before whatever launch is happening. So, and that's usually like commenting on their stuff in a positive way, giving them engagement, getting to know them and what they like, what they dislike. And then about a month out, I like to like email them so that I give them sufficient time to get ready, and ask them to join with me. But yeah, I try to make it not sound like a sales pitch, because I don't think it is a sales pitch. I'm again trying to make something that adds value to their life and my life. And I usually start off pretty casual. My general email starts like, hey, so-and-so, instead of like something more formal, right? And then I usually try to make like an inside joke with them based on like the content that I've consumed, or I say something about that I appreciate about their content if they don't make a lot of jokes. And then I kind of have a second paragraph that explains like who I am, what I would like to make with them. And then I talk about like why I think that their audience in particular would be somebody who's, or a group that's interested in my specific product. So I think, yeah, it sounds like some of those things were lacking, like finding the right audience. And I think too, contacting you publicly, I tend to do emails or Twitter messages. I find Twitter is a good place to connect people. And it feels a little bit more casual and less like a sales call on Twitter, I think, like yourself.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people also, it's not just in crowdfunding, but there have been people who comment on something that's completely inappropriate, mm-hmm. and they'll comment about their thing, like their podcast. Like, mm-hmm. there was an example of, how everybody has like a pin post, like this is what everything is and this is all my stuff and blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. I posted one of those, which is basically saying, here's all my things, can you please also look at my Patreon and blah blah blah, and show and so on and so forth. And somebody comments on it with, here, check out my podcast and blah blah blah. I'm like, no, like that's not the right form, guys. Like, come on. If I post, hey, tell me something you're excited for, which I've done before, and you post in a spam message that you've posted 1,000 other times, and I can tell you've posted 1,000 other times because I've seen it 1,000 other times on my mm-hmm. timeline, you're not talking to me. You're just using my thread to post your shit.
Yeah.
Like, at least answer the question. If I say, how's your day going? What's something that gets you excited? It's like, oh, I'm excited because of blah, blah, blah. I just released a new episode, and here's the link to the episode if anybody wants to check it out. Would have been perfectly okay.
Yeah.
100%. Would have been like, great, awesome. I'll check that. I might check that out later. But to just like post a very blanket statement that isn't even responding to me and just like spam.
Yeah.
Just like, no. And then if you ever said something to the one particular person, they would immediately apologize, say they didn't realize, and then they would go retweet your pinned post and like it. To the point that this happened 4 or 5 times, and other people had also started noticing a trend.
It's like there's a time and a place to promote, and I think it is important to just like think about if it's a better time to promote right then, or you know, to build a relationship right then, and then maybe that'll turn into something later that would be helpful.
The relationship is probably more important.
Yeah, because I mean, I'm definitely really appreciative of you having me on this show right now, and I would rather be on this show than have my like a commented tweet underneath your pinned tweet, you know. I would always rather have that.
And even once you become friends, even if it might take a little bit, that's when people are more likely to share. Like, I don't even friend people half the time until I start reacting or interacting with them on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because I don't know them from anybody else, but when I see, oh, they have this cool post, let me comment on it, and they comment back, and we have it back and forth, and then they comment on my post, and I'm like, yeah, I like you. Okay, we'll follow each other. Like, I'll follow you back. I'll do it that way. But if I just met you 5 seconds ago, I'm not going to just share necessarily whatever you're posting, unless it's like a hardship type thing.
Yeah.
And then I'll post about it.
Yeah, that's why I say to do it like about 3 months out. You know, because I think that's long enough to build a relationship, but it's also, you know, a little bit shorter in terms of like some. I try to interact with a lot of like newer creators or a lot of creators who are like currently growing. And, mm-hmm. you know, some people, life happens and they kind of stop creating content, which is totally fine. But if it's 3 months out, generally most people last 3 months at least. So that way, the relationships are going to last longer or last to during the campaign. But yeah, but then it obviously a lot of people last a long time. Like, you've been around a long time. So very worth it to
almost
build
2 years.
Relationship. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And you've worked on a variety of podcasts, and I know you're very serious about building up your following and stuff. Yeah.
And but, now I'm a freelancer.
Yeah.
Super
Nikki fun. Edits audio, if anybody's,
I do.
If anybody's listening.
I am very busy.
Yeah.
Hello. Sorry for the interruption here, but I wanted to give you an advertisement for one of our friends in the tabletop community. please give it a listen and go check them out.
Oh man, I really want to experience the magic of Dungeons and Dragons, but I'm a cave hermit who made an oath never to speak to other people again.
And I want to watch a classic fantasy series like Lord of the Rings or Game of Thrones, but I can't stand the sight of human faces.
Well, I want to relive the magic of make-believe, the humor of a preschool-age child, and the genuine camaraderie of nearly 10 years of friendship through only my ears, but I don't know how!
You ignorant fools! You don't even know about Dames and Dragons!
What?
But Dames and Dragons? What's that?
Dames and Dragons is a Dungeons and Dragons actual play podcast.
A podcast? So I can experience the spontaneous group storytelling of D&D without breaking my oath of solitude?
That's right.
And I can take part in a rich fantasy storyline without ever having to lay eyes on a disgusting human face?
Never again will the faces plague you.
And it has a cast of 4 female friends who make constant immature jokes as they play?
Absolutely. I would never lead you astray, my friend. Whether you love D&D or just love a good fantasy tale, Dames and Dragons is the podcast for you. Tells the story of 3 unlikely heroes who are chosen to become guardians of the goddess of their world, a floating island by the name of Estra.
By God, that sounds like something I could get into.
Sounds like something I'd love.
Sounds like something I'd make.
Well, that's just ridiculous. Dames and Dragons, updated every second Monday wherever podcasts are sold.
And now, back to the show. What is, like, the dream crowdfunding project that you would want to work on? Besides, like, because I think we discussed this before, but besides, like, getting fully paid to do it full time, what would be, like, oh my god, this project is just, this is what I've been looking for?
I would love to work. I mean, so a lot of the time I get a lot of joy by just seeing an audience that's happy, a client that's happy, everybody in the project's winning. So, you know, if I'm working with like a nice team and working with an audience that's passionate about something, then that's kind of my dream. But I would also say that, like, if I was like hearing about a project for the very first time, I would be so excited about something that's working with some intellectual properties. I've just been seeing a lot of campaigns that have been working with systems that exist, a lot of like Powered by the Apocalypse systems games. Mm-hmm. And then I've seen some that have the intellectual property of like a show or a movie attached to them or a book. And those do really well right now. So I would love to work on something like that. Like, the main one I'm thinking of right now is, like, the Avatar The Last Airbender Powered by the Apocalypse game Kickstarter. At the time of recording, this is, like, the last day for them. But they're literally so big that in their recent update, they had to talk about how there's not enough cardboard in the United States to print the number of books they need to print. And Jesus. That they're, like, pushing the global paper supply is, like, affecting how fast they can create their books. Like they've raised like over $8.5 million. So
oh,
they're
geez.
Yeah, they're doing so good. I'm like watching them closely and trying to learn all their tricks because I'm just
well the first
by
trick
how
is
well it's doing.
The first trick is it's The Last Airbender.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
I think I would like I know I mentioned I won't talk about what the project is. I know I mentioned to you that I was working on something.
Mm-hmm. But everybody should be excited for.
Yeah.
This. Yeah.
It's kind of it's not being pushed out quickly, so it's not gonna be done anytime soon. But in the process of working on that, I've also been working on some TTRPGs. Like we put out our first, it wasn't a crowdfunded, but we put out our first one page combat system.
Ooh.
Which surprisingly did pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mosaic system, which means it stands alone on its own and it could be used in anything, which is what we wanted.
Cool.
So basically, if you play any tabletop game that doesn't have a combat system of its own, you can just add this in and use it as a combat system. And
mm-hmm.
I think it has like, I want to say it has like 1,300 downloads.
That's a lot of downloads. That's pretty cool.
I think. Hold on. Let me double check. 1,039 downloads. 3,307 views.
Uh-huh.
But it's on itch.io.
Cool.
It's called The Coolest Combat System, a Mosaic Strix System.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be found on my account, which I'll put down below because I don't know the name off the top of my head, or MJ Gibson's account on itch.io. Uh-huh. Because we made it together on a one shot or on an episode in 45 minutes.
Wow, nice. That's cool.
And we've been working on another one, but we both got really swamped, so we kind of put it on hold for a second. But I'm really excited for that one. But the reason why I'm bringing up TTRPGs is because there's a third one that's not the YouTube one that I wanted to build. And I've talked about this type of system multiple times. It's a city building type game because mm-hmm. I love those games.
I love those games too.
But my friend is also really interested in it, and he is very good at like mechanical type things
mm-hmm.
and keeping things on track and helping me stay motivated and focused because I get distracted very quickly because I have so much on my plate.
Oh yeah, it's so much just to have somebody else on the project just to keep you motivated, just to 100%. Receive those messages like, hey, are you doing this, or when do we get this done?
100%.
So helpful. Yeah.
So we're basically like, we've been playing a, it's not a city building game anymore, but we basically, for my Monday game, we've taken like 6 or 7 different systems and combined them to make the system that we were using. And it was just little things from a whole bunch of things. And it still wasn't exactly what I wanted. So I keep saying, I want to build my own. I want to build my own. And now we're going to try to actually do that using some inspiration from a previously existing city building game and combining that with my original inspiration, which was Pathfinder Ultimate Campaign, Majesty, and Rimworld, and a little bit of Civilization. So the only thing that's changed drastically from my original thought process is originally I wanted, like, you're building a city, one city as a group. Now it's going to be you each have your own city
mm-hmm.
and you have your own problems and resources. And there is no GM. It's a GM-less game.
Oh.
And then you have X amount of points to spend per turn, and you can do certain things, but you have to gain resources, and you have armies and stuff like that. And there's I want the randomness of Rimworld and the research table of Rimworld mm-hmm. with the city building aspect of Ultimate Campaign and the buildings that give bonuses of the Ultimate Campaign and the government systems of a mix of everything. But the over down top view of Majesty. Because with Majesty, you're like, you're the king, and you're up above looking down on everybody, demanding them what to do, but...
Yeah. Yeah, no, I like that. I like the idea of, like, telling a story on, like, a grander scale than normal, you know, across a vast, expansive area, and with a lot more, like, rulership. Because...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, like, you can also ally yourself with your friends, or you could make them enemies and try to attack them, but then if you attack them, you risk losing people, and you risk leaving yourself up for attacking on a random encounter type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like it's kind of like there's like some cooperation a little bit encouraged, because it's like hard to, it's like you're taking some risks if you do conflict, but it's like the conflict is there, and like it's like not telling you to avoid that. So it's like there's still the drama that can come from that if yes. the story goes that direction, which is very
but
cool.
Also, if you, even if you don't ally yourself with other people, if you're attacked and you don't ally yourself, what if they allied with the other people that are attacking you? Then you're kind of screwed too. Or if you just hoard everything and don't share at all, then you, when you need help because, oh shit, your crops all died because of a blight, or a blight system came through, who's going to come help you and give you food? Because you were being a dick.
It's like working together is like what helps you to get through the hard times, basically.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, and like the risk, deal with the risks of like the random gods of randomness.
Yes.
Yeah.
And like the ultimate campaign in Pathfinder, the thing I didn't like about it was you had a ruler, and then you had like seven other spots beneath the ruler, that, and each one was supposed to be filled, where you had negatives.
Okay.
And people were supposed to fill those spots. So that meant you had four or five NPCs that were being played by the DM just so there weren't negatives. But what I found when we played it, well, two things. One, it's completely built off of financial earnings from adventuring.
Okay.
And two was the ruler was the one who made all the choices.
Mm-hmm.
So that felt unfair because it felt like this is your game, the ruler's game only, and everybody else is just listening and acting out their orders.
Mm-hmm.
When I wanted a cooperative game where each person was their own ruler. So I think in this new one, I'm going to do, you are your government, whatever that may be. So if you're a council, you are the council. If it's a monarchy, you are the monarch. If it's a democracy, you are the president. Like, whatever it is, you are the one in charge, or playing as the government in charge.
Yeah.
And then you'll have your own positives and negatives based off whatever you choose.
Yeah, I think that's great. I mean, I think too, it's like, that's like the best way to come up with things that people really want to see in the world, I think too, where you look and you see a problem with the existing like game systems, and you say, I'm going to solve that problem. And then you go and you solve that problem. And then everybody who had that same problem can come and find your game and say, I was having that exact same problem. Now it's fixed. Thank you. You know?
Yeah.
That's exactly the best way to make things people want, I think.
I kind of also liked the concept of, like, what happens when villagers make shit? Like, why does it have to make money? Like, why does money have to make things?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's, to me, like, a super interesting concept. But I'm also that person that would like to have romance or relationships or friendships building in every single RPG I ever play. Because that's what makes it fun for me.
Yeah. I think that sounds great. I think that having these relationships makes it more interesting because there's more interesting characters to interact with when there's these relationships building up.
Yeah. And it won't be as heavy roleplay wise, but it can be when you're actually meeting each other. But we'll see. I kind of went on that topic because the YouTube thing is going to be kickstarted eventually. And then depending on how well this does, there is a potential that it could be kickstarted depending on how big it is. Because this isn't going to be small. It's not going to be like 20 pages. There's no fucking way it's going to fit in 20 pages.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not going to just, if it's a bigger project, then I don't know if I'll just put it up on itch.io or if I'm going to want to kickstart it to get like the pretty art and stuff.
For sure. I mean, there's people putting out, you know, if it's longer than 20 pages, I mean, there are people who put out like 20 page content. And, you know, I make it sound maybe a little bit more intimidating when I say like, oh, like reach out to or start doing your marketing like 6 months out. But, you know, if it's a smaller product than normal, what I would think, because I'm thinking like 150 page books, then, you know, it doesn't have to be as intimidating as 6 months of prep time.
I mean, honestly, based off of the original book that this is based on, this could be 100 sub plus pages.
Yeah, well, you know, I think kickstarting is great. I think you should kickstart it, but, you know, I'm like the biggest fan of kickstarting and just a big crowdfunding nerd, so.
And slightly biased because I wanted to go to you.
Oh, yeah? Well, you know, you can shop around if you want. I wouldn't be offended, but that'd be cool.
I don't know anybody else who does this.
Yeah, it's kind of rare. I mean, there's some really good people I know who do like crowdfunding for like board games, but yeah, I don't find a lot of other people. But maybe it's just that we tend to not work in the same teams because we'd be a bit redundant.
Yeah, that's fair. I think I know like one other person who does things similar, but it's not related to crowdfunding. It's related to like charity events.
Mm-hmm. Is that Hope for TTRPGs?
No, so I know two people.
Cool. Yeah, Hope does great stuff.
The book that I am discussing was 176 pages.
Cool. Oh, man.
Originally, one that I like most of the concepts of it, but not everything from it.
Yeah. So,
like, I want to tweak it. Like, use some of the concepts from it as inspiration.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
I'll tell you what it is after we're done recording, but...
Exciting.
If I remember.
I'll try to remind you.
Keyword.
cool, yeah. Well, you have a lot of different cool projects in the oven, so you a lot of exciting stuff for people to watch out for.
I have a lot of problems. like literally, we totally got off topic, but it's whatever. A friend was telling me about a game idea that she had for a podcast, and I'm like, ooh, but what if you did this, and somehow that led to us each DMing 4 of 8 games and it being like a versus competition type deal. And okay. I'm just like, huh. Okay, well, if we do this, we can only do it annually. I can't take on another podcast. I can possibly do like 4 episodes, but like, I can't do much more than that.
Yeah, it's good to know your limits like that, though. Yeah.
I don't follow them very often, but...
that's how you know creative people, though. They have a bunch of projects, you know, how it is. I saw some game designers making a joke the other day about how if you don't have, like, 10 unfinished games in your, like, closet, are you even a game designer? I thought that was pretty funny.
Fair. I mean, the same with writing and the same with... Like, I don't have diagnosed ADHD, but I have the equivalency of ADHD when it comes to crafting. At least in the very stereotypical sense of I get distracted very quickly and pull myself to another project extremely fast. Podcasting is probably the longest I've ever been on a project because it changes so frequently. But I have done over like probably a dozen, 2 dozen different types of art. And I have so many unfinished projects hiding in my entertainment center in my living room, stored away somewhere that I don't know if I'll ever touch, but as soon as I get rid of them, I'm going to want to do it. So I can't get rid of it.
I hear you.
What if I suddenly want to sew up that dress that won't fit me anymore that I cut out 6 years ago? Like, it might happen. I don't know.
Yeah, I understand that. I one thing people might not know about me is I'm a drag queen too. I do drag, and I also do like games, right? And so it's like I have all these like little pieces of like Spirit Halloween items or like just random stuff that I've just stored, and a lot of them aren't complete costumes, but I'm like, I can't get rid of any piece because what if I find the perfect like part to finish this costume, you know? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
I get it. Like, there's certain things like that don't make sense. Like I won't hold on to trash and stuff like that. Though I have been watching this one guy on YouTube recently who uses almost completely trash and dollar store items to make really cool objects.
That's cool. That sounds.
And he makes terrain with it. So he made Howl's Moving Castle.
Ow.
Which is humongous and ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And he made it mostly with trash.
Wow. That's amazing. That's a special skill to have. I love that too, because it's like it's recycling. You know, it's basically recycling. So it's like nice for the environment and making something creative and neat.
Yeah, it's Studson Studio.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out.
He's done a couple of things. Like he's built the Spirited Away house. He built a toad pod racer. Some of his stuff is silly. The Animal Crossing Museum.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
The Zelda stable. Jurassic Park house. My favorite one, or one of the funniest ones, I think, that he builds, it was it was a Cyberpunk 2077 plus Shrek. And he built a outhouse for Cyber Shrek.
I love it. So
and
funny.
It's just like little things that he does that makes it ridiculous, like printing out tiny posters or like putting a roll of toilet paper that's covered in like gross goo in the corner, like just tiny little details. And I'm like, that's so gross, but genius. Also, how did that come out so good? I'm so confused.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah, I would love to learn more about like making terrain. I recently started like through the last year I've been playing online like Warhammer using like Tabletop Simulator, and they have all the terrain, and I'm like, it'd be cool one day to like go to some in-person Warhammer stuff, and I'd love to learn some terrain making. I think that'd be pretty cool.
I mean, I can offline, I can show you some basic stuff. I did some basic terrain building.
Sure, please.
It's a lot of how to reuse things in a way.
Yeah.
And how to make foam do its magic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice.
So, back on topic for a moment, is there any advice that you would offer to someone who's considering crowdfunding in the near future or in the future period?
I would say the two main things for crowdfunding is you know, just do your research. Don't be afraid to reach out to people who've done what you've done before. Almost everybody's, you know, everybody's nice and would give you advice. And, you know, there's a lot of free content out there that will help somebody. And then just give yourself enough time would be my second tip. So just give yourself enough time to build the audience in a way that has those meaningful relationships you need. It's always better to prop a project if you need to build those relationships and just take a little bit longer rather than to rush something through. Because
mm-hmm.
it's really harrowing those days where the Kickstarter is live. It's really scary having it not yet funded. It's going to be some sleepless nights. So the fewer of those nights you can have by building the relationships ahead of time, you're mm-hmm. really going to appreciate it more than pushing it through and trying to get something done as soon as possible.
I think the other thing with mentioning asking people for advice, if they're a bigger person, like a more popular person, double check they haven't already given this advice. Like do a quick search on YouTube if they have a YouTube channel, on Twitch if they have a Twitch channel, on Twitter if they have a Twitter, like wherever they are, just double check that they haven't already answered all of these questions, because there is potential that they've been asked this question before and they've already put like a whole thread or a whole video or whatever about it and you just didn't do the research. So definitely try first to look for that video, because that video might be really useful.
Yeah, for sure. And there's you know, same goes for groups. There's a lot of groups out there where you can ask a general group for advice. Yep.
The power of Twitter.
Yep.
And YouTube.
Yeah, I recently asked Twitter for help with fulfillment, and like 16 people reached out to me helping me figure out fulfillment stuff. So Twitter's so nice. Twitter TTRPG sometimes is a nice place. To me, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, they are. But yeah, there's some not so great people. But
sure,
you can block those not so great people, so it's fine.
Yeah, every group's got some problems for sure.
Yeah, that's fair. So, where can everybody find you?
Yeah, so mostly I'm active on Twitter. I'm at DanielNimitz1. And then you can also email me at dnimitz29@gmail.com. Yeah, those are the best places to reach me. If you need any help with your crowdfunding, you know, I'm always also somebody who's here to give advice. If it's anything that I can help with easily, I'll, you know, I'm always happy to just help somebody out. And if you need marketing expertise, you know, I'm here for that as well.
And one day you will charge for it.
And
make all the money.
Yeah. Yep, that's the dream.
So on that note, thank you so much for joining. It was a blast to talk to you and about you and not about, well, I have to talk about me a lot.
Whatever I do that. Projects I'm on. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Actually about crowdfunding. So definitely everybody go check out those links down below and give Daniel some love. And also, you can check out some other links down below, such as our Twitter, Beholder to No One, or you can find me at Dice Before Dawn or Sound Control RPG. You can also find me as a DM for at least another 3 more sessions or so at Awfully Queer Heroes or Awfully Q Heroes on Twitter. For the next couple of weeks, I don't really know the schedule because I don't remember when this is going out, but on Friday, for about a total of 10 more weeks over the course of now and mid-December, there's going to be a break in there somewhere, I will be playing as Karen Barlow, the 90s goth grunge ghost, potentially, possibly a ghost, possibly not a ghost, I don't know right now, in 2000 Tales on Twitch. So definitely go and see her. She's a lot of fun to play. And if you like any of my stuff, I have a Patreon, and you can support that Patreon and get early access to most of my content, including when it is edited, Sound Control RPG, and Dice Before Dawn content before it'll even be out in the public, because I still have a couple months until I sign contracts for those. So if you want to see those things, join the Patreon for at least $5. So that is everything from me. Again, thank you so much for listening, and I hope you have an awesome day. Bye! Hey, before you go, I just wanted to let you know that this episode was edited by Matt over at Walsh Animation. They are part of the Table Party podcast, and I wanted to give a little bit of a shout out to them, especially because Matt has been such a freaking lifesaver when it comes to editing the discussion episodes recently. So please listen to this ad for Table Party podcast and go check them out and make sure you give them some love. Thanks.
What makes Table Party different from other tabletop podcasts?
The music.
The setting.
The characters.
The gore.
A bunch of different games.
The refreshing coldness of ice cream.
The 300-foot-tall squid named Delilah.
The dice rolls.
The horrifying body horror.
The aroma.
The suffering of my players.
Dairy Queen blizzards.
The luxurious plush texture.
The free coupons.
Bad decisions.
And who can we expect?
I'm Kelsey.
I'm Matt.
I'm Gabe.
I'm Walsh.
I'm Chris.
Welcome to the Table Party.
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 Welcome to the Table Party.